Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. My name is Jeanette Abney, and I want to welcome you to Precious Predicaments here at Blog Talk Radio. And I want to talk about our topic today. And our topic of discussion basically have to do with suicide prevention and awareness. And I invited some individuals to join us today, and I haven't seen that they have called in yet, so I'll give it a couple of minutes before they decide to hopefully join and log on with me. But again, my name is Jeanette Abney. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and I'm the owner of two outpatient centers, basically located in three different counties, which is Orange County, Riverside County, and San Diego County. Now, as a therapist, I found this topic to be very interesting because the topic, even though it has to do with suicide prevention, and basically September was the month which was basically nationally known for suicide prevention and awareness, which is the month that they chose. But there are still a lot of individuals, as we get closer to Christmas, we just got finished with Thanksgiving, and I wanted this topic to be a topic of interest because we're losing people daily for a lot of different reasons. And a lot of times when we talk about life and death and things of that nature, you know, sometimes we minimize things. It looks like one of my guests has basically already joined in. So I'm ready to add her to the line. Good morning. This is Jeanette. How are you doing?
Good morning, Jeanette. This is Amalia Lamb.
Thank you, Amalia. Thank you for joining me. I'm waiting on the other person to join us. And I'll just share with the listeners about basically September is actually the Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. But I wanted to talk about this topic because we're seeing so much of it, you know, and basically a lot of times family members don't know what to do. They don't know how to identify the warning signs. They don't know, you know, what's going on with their loved ones. So I wanted to just basically have a sense of awareness, especially, like I said, as we're getting closer to the holidays, a lot of things is going on. So, Amalia, I want you to introduce yourself and tell the listeners who you are.
Hi, everyone. My name is Amalia Lamb. I'm an MSW, working towards my LCSW. Currently, I am employed with the county here in Orange County, and my specialty is with pregnant teenagers, as well as having a county position as a social worker. I also do private practice. And in our private practice, I do speak on terms related to mental health, such as, you know, suicide, depression, anger management being some of those topics, and how drugs and alcohol also affect our mental health situations. Besides that, I also do have a background in social policy. I did run for local politics here in Huntington Beach, California, and I was part of the team that created the Office of Veteran Affairs for Mayor Eric Garcetti for the city of Los Angeles. So my background is kind of mixed, as most mental health professionals are. I have seen the suicide interventions needed within all aspects of life, from early childhood. Teen suicides is actually very high. It's the second highest rate is within the teen population, which is, you know, under 25. And then again, with our veteran populations, where it's 22 a day is what our statistics are for our veterans population. As a mental health professional, I was taught not to dance around signs of suicide. And I know I understand that that's very hard and difficult to do when you're a family member and you have concerns. But we have to remember that suicide has very clear warning signs of their intentions. And although,
before we give listeners all the information, Amalia, slow down a little bit. Slow it down. Because basically you said something in regards to the second leading cause of death. I want to start with, first of all, being able to understand what suicide is about. And you mentioned some things in regards to like substance use and things of that nature. And some of the things that I want to, you know, lead into, because we got a whole hour show. So we don't want to go so fast in the first 10 minutes and then we don't know what's happening with our lips. But
basically,
suicidal thoughts can affect anyone regardless of their age. And I wanted
Correct.
You to be on the show because I know you work with pregnant teens. And when you're mm-hmm. working with pregnant teens, a lot of times teenagers have their own issues. And
Correct.
We're seeing suicide basically increasing even as young as kids that are in elementary school. And you would want to know, like, why is that child wanting to die? Or why is that mm-hmm. child having these thoughts? Because it could be a lot of different things going on in that child's life. Now, basically, with the information that I have, even though it talks about regardless of your age, your gender, or your background, they mm-hmm. indicate that it is actually, because you mentioned in regards to the second leading cause regarding teenagers, but it's actually mm-hmm. the third leading cause of death amongst young people, and it often can't be the result of a mental health condition that can affect uh-huh. individuals who are most vulnerable. Because if uh-huh. you're already dealing with some of the things you were talking about with depression, anxiety, and, you know, schizophrenia, some of the things that we can talk about, is individuals with a mental health condition can be actually more vulnerable. And also uh-huh. if they are basically have been told if there's a life-threatening illness. Now, suicidal thoughts and suicide occurs too frequently, but should not be considered common. And a lot of times we start ignoring some of the warning signs because we'll say, oh, well, they say that all the time. And
Correct.
That can also be considered a risk factor. But in many mm-hmm. cases, the individual, the family, the friends affected mm-hmm. by suicide are left in the dark. And mm-hmm. that's one of the reasons why I wanted to, like I said, bring this a sense of awareness so we can come out of the darkness into light. So that family members will not be left with feeling shame or the stigma that prevents individuals from actually talking openly about this issue and dealing with it.
Right.
Because we always ask individuals, well, how do you feel? And sometimes mm-hmm. if people ask me that question, how you doing today, Jeanette? Sometimes I say, you don't even want to know. I don't even want to talk about it, you know. But the bottom line is, I learned about suicide at a young age. And I'm going to tell you, Amalia, that was something personally I never wanted to play with. Never wanted
Correct.
To play with suicide. Because I used to see, you know, I didn't know actually what it was about. But I know mm-hmm. I'll never forget my mother one time because she was just always depressed. Always drinking, always depressed. And I remember one day her just sitting in that chair listening to that song, He's Leaving on That Midnight Train to Georgia, when my father left.
I know.
And mm-hmm. I always said, I never want to go there. And I remember when I was in my master's program, we had to do an assignment. And the teacher told us to close our eyes and think of a time when we were at the lowest part of our life. And we kind of thought about taking our lives. And I participated, but I didn't close my eyes. So I'm looking at everybody in the classroom. So after the session was over, the class was over, the teacher came up to me and said, Jeanette, you didn't participate. I said, yes, I did. She said, well, you never had thoughts of suicide? You never felt that hopelessness? I said, no. I said, why should I kill me? If I get mad, I'm going to kill the person that made me mad. I ain't going to kill myself. That didn't make sense. And she thought that I was like, well, what is wrong with you? You know, mm-hmm. but because of what I saw, I knew that that was not going to solve my problem. So then I was the one that was like, okay, well, you know what? We got to come up with other ways of handling things before, you know, people get to that point. Now, when you talked about the teens and the teenagers and pregnancy and things of that nature, what is your take on that, Amalia? Because, first of all, being pregnant and being a teenager is no joke. So what are some of the things that you see?
Well, what I try to educate other colleagues of mine or other service providers with teenagers is that teen pregnancies is very complicated. It affects socioeconomic, financially, psychologically. There's a lot of effects that happens when a teenager gets pregnant. The entire family goes into distress. The parents are upset. How can my baby do this? Most of the girls have a boyfriend that was loving, caring. Sometimes it was a planned pregnancy. There's a lot of sexual coercion going on where the males are pressuring these girls to get pregnant. If you love me, you do this. And then they do it and the boys leave. I do have some male clients, and we do have single fathers, which is also an increasing number that I'm seeing. So what I tell the schools is, you know, you see this girl that's coming in late. You do not see the precipitating factors as to why she's late. It could be her baby was sick all night. It could be that she missed the bus. She has to wake up 3 hours earlier than most of the other teenagers because she has to prepare a diaper bag. She has to plan her trip. She has to carry a stroller to get to school, just to have basic education. So when you see someone as a service provider, when you see someone walking in, you do not know all the things that they have gone through just to be able to make it to your appointment. There's a lot of missed schools. There's a lot of teachers that have very supportive teachers, but there's also some teachers that do have this bias towards, you know, judgment when there is a very young mother. I'm saying mothers that are in junior high. So we have parents that are upset, and then we have friends. They no longer have the friends coming over because, you know, now as a mother, you don't have the free time to go to the mall whenever or to go party whenever if you're, you know, if you're just doing the basics with your child. So it's a very, very complicated. On top of the mental health, because of such a young age, some of them don't realize that this is a mental health problem that they're going through. They don't see the difference between depression and sadness. So sadness, as I tell them, is sadness is you think of something and you get sad. Depression, you just wake up sad. And when there's a pregnancy, we have the hormones going on, and then afterwards we have the postpartum depression, which affects 1 out of 3 women. So just as a given, postpartum depression is there. But when there is a mental health that has not been diagnosed, and that creates a concern.
Okay. We're going to get to some of those mental health issues, like I said, because I'm going to call some of them out. But I want to say pain is not always obvious because there's different type of pain. And one of the pains that you're talking about is, you know, the fact that they are young parents. I remember when I got pregnant with my son, I was 19. Shoot, my mother still wanted to kill me. And that was enough, and I was already out of school. But did you know that basically every day friends, families, coworkers struggle with emotional pain? And for some, too difficult to talk about the pain. So the thoughts of suicide and the need for help become kind of taboo because individuals don't know what to do. And sometimes they may self-medicate, they do certain things. And when they're teenagers, sometimes sex is a way that they handle their pain. But through the warning signs, even though they can be kind of subdued, the things is there is help out there. But we got to recognize these signs, and we have to know how to start just a basic conversation. And when we start this conversation and start in this dialogue, that's when people realize that they have power, and then that's how we give them their power back to make a difference in their life, because the power is basically to save a life. And that's why when we start talking about these things and, you know, developing coping skills, you know, trying to, you know, I remember one time I had a young kid tell me that, and I really thought that he was having suicidal thoughts. And the kid told me suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And even though a lot of times people say that that's taboo, but the problem is when you think about what you're going through, if you think it's going to last forever, you don't know how to deal with that. But if you know, like I heard a person say the other day, that after the rain comes the sunshine, and then I like to think of the rainbow, is sometimes we may not have that patience. But knowing, like I said, the signs. But some of the things that we also have to look for, because people start having these little feelings, emotions, and things of that nature. And like I said, and even with this topic, I was waiting on Tammy to call me, and she hasn't called me yet, so I don't know. She said something about her phone, but she really needs to give me a call. But, you know, even in a lot of times when people are dealing with pain, sometimes they run to church. And they go to church wanting a church to help them feel better. And then sometimes they don't even know how to be honest with what they're going through because they can't even explain it. You know, I used to say my mother ran to the liquor store, you know, because whenever she would get upset, she wanted to go have a drink. But people use certain coping skills. And then you start, we always tell people, even in a therapeutic setting, let's get to the root of the problem. But basically, we want to know, where does it hurt? It's kind of like the doctor talking to you. Where do you feel the most pain? You know, is it in your relationship? Is it in your finances? Is it in the ones that you love? Is it in disappointment? Where is that pain at? And a lot of times, individuals can't even give you the word. Now, talking about some of the different, and I indicated we're going to be talking about a lot of different factors, but even though there are a number of psychosocial factors that are associated with just the risk, because remember, some individuals are at a higher risk than others. Some individuals have had more attempts. Some individuals can try one time, and that's it, and they're gone. And you wonder, okay, well, they were successful. And, I mean, like I said, I was always so confused about the behavior. Now, if anyone wants to call in and they want to join Amalia and I, you can give me a call at 516-387-1914. And you can be anonymous. You know, we just want you to share your story, basically how you made it through, what worked for you, because you never know. Someone hearing your testimony or hearing your story may make them realize, you know what, my life is precious. I don't need to do all of this. Somebody loved me and somebody cared about me. Now, Amalia, I'm going to go back to not only, like I said, talking about the psychosocial risk factors that are associated.
Correct.
These are some recent life events, such as losses, employment.
Right.
We've seen in our history a lot of individuals, especially if they lose their job during the holidays, you know, just the loss of employment, how, you know, the father, we've heard the story of people going postal, or your father lost a job, he come home, you know, kill everybody in the house, things of that nature. But employment, loss of career, loss of finances, loss of housing, marital relationships, physical health, and a sense of the future. Let's just talk about some of those recent life events. What would you do, or talking to some of your teenagers, you know, or even some of the veterans that you worked with, when they just dealt with just some of those just recent life events?
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, in mental health, we have a checklist for changes in life events. And the more changes in life events that you have, you have an increase of mental health issues, depression, and so on. So all of these life events, because there's a change that we're going through, it's either a change of relationship, like you mentioned, a change of even a change of hope. So you're hopeful that something was going to happen. It doesn't happen. Now you have a sense of hopelessness and despair. And these are signs of depression. And when it's not treated, when you withdraw from family, you become irritable and aggressive, you no longer care about your hygiene or your looks, or you have a change in eating and sleeping habits, these are very common factors of depression. So for those listeners who think maybe somebody is going through a depression, these are just some signs. If you have a child, maybe there's a decline in their grades or their school performances, or they just no longer have interest in activities that they used to have, and this is very common with depression. Some of the other signs is that they just become preoccupied with death.
Let's go back to the recent life event. Because people are losing their jobs, losing their careers, finances, housing, marital, physical health, sense of the future. We're going to just stick right there. Because like I said, if a person is told they go to work and their boss tell them you're fired and they know the holidays is coming up, what can we tell that person in regards to just that area? Employment, careers, financing, and housing. So because somebody out there I know is going through that, you know, going through housing, can't pay their rent, dealing with marital relationships, dealing with physical health, you know, those are just some things that we may kind of, you know, brush it off. But when they talk about employment, careers, finances, housing, marital relationships, physical health, that affects their future.
Right.
So even though one can slip into depression with that, you know, it's like, do we, you know, sometimes people don't just want to hear it's going to get better or you go find a job. They don't want to hear that at that time. So then sometimes in the mental health, we do have to look for the signs that you're talking about. But at the same token, we got to validate their feelings. We got to, you know, listen to what they're seeing in regard to their career changes by giving them some hope. You know, when you take a person, at one point, the employment situation was so bad that we had individuals at McDonald's with PhDs or we had individuals that had degrees and had, you know, even in our field of drug and alcohol, we went through this process where in 2005, in order to be a drug and alcohol counselor, many individuals had felonies, they had records, because some would say that sometimes a person with life experience made the best counselor. But what happened was in 2005, they started cleaning up the field to where you then had to become certified, licensed, or be an intern, being registered with the Board of Behavior Sciences. So some individuals kind of fell off the rock and lost their job, and they were angry about that. And I saw that some individuals have been drug and alcohol counselor for 30 years, but yet never went back to school to enhance their education. And that was kind of like, so they had to deal with that with their future. And they didn't want to hear what other people had to say, because it was like, what am I going to do? You know, when I tell my story, even with me with the county, I went from being fired 3 times in 1 year to actually buying a corporation. Didn't know what I was doing, but I had coping skills. I had a sense of, you know what, I'm going to do what I got to do. Everybody don't have that. And that's what we have to be aware of that. Okay. I'm still waiting on a caller to call in. I am getting some emails, and I'm going to basically answer some of the questions of the emails that I'm receiving. But the next one, Amalia, has to do with...
Can I just address really quickly, because it is the holidays, this is also a time where there's a lot of Christmas charities. In California, we have InfoLink. So if you're local in Southern California, then you would just dial 211, the same way that you would dial 911, or if you're a little bit older, 411. And that will link you to a resource center where you can ask for the local Christmas charities. For people that are out of state, your SSA, which would be your Medi-Cal free financial aid government assistance programs, they also will have some sort of Christmas holiday assistance. For employment, there's also the one-stop centers, who there's a Workforce Investment Act that passed in the 80s to help you with the job searching so you're not doing it on your own. So I'll assign you a case manager. That case manager will actually send you job links 3 or 4 days before it hits the public. So there are a lot of programs out there. Unfortunately, it's one of those things where you don't know what you don't know.
Correct. And, so, and like I said, and that's what we hear.
Right.
And when, you're, them information.
You, and when you have so many problems, it's very muddy, to push aside your emotions and your fears to go directly to the source. So I would say in Southern California, contact 211. Southern California, I would contact your local government assistance program where you would sign up for, in California we call it CalFresh for food stamps, CalWORKs for, well, for money, and Medi-Cal.
Well, one of the things you talked about, or you just mentioned, I'm going to piggyback on it a little bit, is a crisis. Mm-hmm. When some things happen in our life, it becomes a crisis. And when we are in crisis mode, things are foggy. Things are, you know, are all over the place. Now, I want to go to the next topic is when we're talking about not only just those things with the losses, but chronic long-term problems such as relation difficulties, even though we know that unemployment, problems with the legal authorities and legal charges. That is another area where individuals feel like, oh, my God, I just got arrested, or I got a DUI, life is over, or, you know, my so-and-so went to prison. And, you know, that's another area where individuals start having suicidal thoughts, because I know way back when I started my internship, I did an internship at Juvenile Hall in San Diego County. And sometimes when kids would come into the unit, they would place individuals on what's called a suicide watch. And even in our prison system today, sometimes individuals are placed on suicide watch if they have a history of suicidality or suicidal ideations and things of that nature, because sometimes when individuals get in trouble, they will become suicidal. And, you know, and sometimes even, and I don't even want to just, you know, just even with the legal authorities, you know, sometimes at one point we have this where people were doing a suicide by cop, or I say my son was doing a suicide by mom. My son would get on my nerves so bad. I was like, this sucker must want me to kill him. You know, I said, he didn't want to do a suicide by cop. He was trying to do a suicide by his own mama. So people will do that. Now, you touched on some of the things in regards to the psychological state. Now, with the psychological state of acute or extreme distress, you know, especially humiliation, despair, guilt, and shame. Mm-hmm. These are some things that individuals may not realize is often present in associating with suicidal ideations, plannings, and attempts. Because, as you know, Amani, as a therapist, we have to do what's called a risk assessment. And when we're doing this risk assessment, we want to know, what's your plan? How many times you've attempted? You know,
correct.
If you're planning, do you have any guns? Do you have any weapons? Do your significant other have access to any weapons? You know, because a lot of times, even when we start looking at their and hearing their how they plan on doing it, some people will tell you. Some people won't. You know, we know that women actually make more attempts where men are more successful. You know, I remember just sharing a story. One time I saw a guy, and he came into the county building, and his face was kind of disfigured. And me being nosy, I started asking a bunch of questions because I wanted to know why he was on a cane, why his face looked all broke up, and, you know, what was going on. The man told me that he had lost his job, and he went into the county building, and he went to the courthouse. And every door he tried to go into was locked. He said then he went onto the freeway overpass, couldn't go up there. Everything he tried, it failed. And he was so angry, but he was so determined to commit suicide. So what he did was he finally went back after he kept going into, I think he said like 5 or 10, 6 doors at the county building and couldn't get in because the doors was locked where he was going to jump off the building. He then went back to the freeway overpass and jumped off the freeway.
Wow.
And ironically enough, when he jumped off the freeway, the wind shifted his body and he fell on the dirt. He said he broke every bone in his body and disfigured his face. And he had to live with that. He really had to live with that. You know, and a part of me wanted to say, well, you know, because I was a, I wasn't very a seasoned therapist at the time. I was like, okay, but was it worth it? But just what he was going through, it was not his time to go. And that's one thing. So if you're listening out there, if you believe that your life is not precious and you want to take your life, it doesn't mean you will always be successful. Because like I said, that man had to live with his face being disfigured, body was all broke up. And like he said, he broke every bone in his body trying to jump off the freeway and the wind just shifted him. He didn't even land on the freeway. He landed on the side of the freeway in the dirt, you know.
Right.
I had a very similar situation
when I first started social work about 15 years. And she had several attempts over a freeway overpass as well and was never successful. She never was able to complete. You know, suicide in this way, it seems like it was a sign of a despair. Maybe it was just an acute mental health break. Like traditional, I don't want to use the word traditional, but suicide usually does follow a pattern where it starts off with the threats, and you know there are some attempts. There's also preoccupation with it, but if you're concerned about a family member, they do make final arrangements. That's why we see suicide notes.
You're jumping, Amalia.
Jumping again. All right.
Calm your nerves. You're jumping. Okay. So.
All right.
But again, we're going to go with, like I said, talk about the ideation and the prevention, the behavior, things of that nature. Talking also about certain physical disorders. With certain physical disorders that are associated with an increased risk of suicide includes diseases of the nervous system, meaning when individuals have diseases or illnesses such as epilepsies, tumors, Alzheimer's, multiple sclerosis, spinal cord injury, traumatic brain injury, cancers, and I'm going to go back to the cancers, the autoimmune diseases, the renal diseases, and HIV/AIDS, which was really, really at one point where individuals would become very, very suicidal if they were told that they had these life-threatening illnesses. And now we're finding also that chronic pain syndrome can contribute substantially to an increased risk in affected individuals. And a lot of times what happens is individuals start feeling helpless, hopeless, and just a mere pain. They just can't take the pain anymore. you know, because for many of you that know me, some don't, when my mom was diagnosed with cancer and she was dealing with that, you know, we don't really know what she did, because part of me still believes she kind of got tired of having the cancer. And because she did have these suicidal tendencies, and her thing was, I'm going to make all y'all pay. You know, y'all going to miss me when I'm gone, because she couldn't take it anymore. She didn't want to go to the doctor no more. You know, and then we have that, I can't think of the doctor's name. What was his name? Kevorkian? Was that his name, Amalia? That was a suicidal doctor?
Yeah.
That was the
that
right
was
to
him,
live
yeah.
and the right to die right. or whatever he had going on.
Assisted. It was assisted suicide.
Assisted suicide assistance, yeah. Attempt. So basically, you know, people started voting for that because it was like, okay, so if these individuals are dealing with these life-threatening illnesses, should they have the right to take their lives? And that also became very confusing, because then you wonder, okay, well, what about healing? Am I going to get better? Am I going to, you know, what is life going to be like? And then we found that individuals that were diagnosed with HIV/AIDS, they started living longer. So they weren't as high risk of suicidality as they were before, but now cancer is increasing. So now we don't know if individuals that have cancer, after they've been told that they have cancer, if there's a higher rate of suicide, because they do slip into depression and start having these different thoughts going through their head, and also patients with traumatic brain injury. And part of it, even with the comparison with the TBI, the survivors of a TBI can increase risk for suicidation.
Right.
So
correct.
Those are some of the things. Now, I know we have less than 30 minutes. We actually have 28 minutes left on the show. So I want to give you guys some information in regards to look for some of the warning signs. And this was some of the things and where you were going, Amalia. And you start talking about people putting their affairs in order. I remember before my grandmother died, she started giving stuff away. You know, it's like me. If I tell, well, first of all, I'm not suicidal. So anybody say Jeanette committed suicide, that's a lie. That ain't happening, you know. But so if I call you or whatever, maybe I might get a TBI. I'm not trying to minimize it. If I come say, y'all come get all my food, you know it's something wrong, okay? So if all my food got to go, it's a problem. But people start putting their affairs in order. They start giving away possessions. There's changes in their sleep, you know, reckless behavior. You start seeing them doing things that they normally didn't do, that, you know, wasn't doing. The anxiety, the sudden mood changes, the withdrawals, and the feeling helpless, hopeless, desperate, and trapped. So when we start listening and we start hearing these things, those are things we have to basically to look for. And we have to know, like I said, what those are. And it's very important, very, very important, because nevertheless, these are factors that are not necessarily closely related to the time of the onset of the behaviors. And it doesn't have anything to do with the risk alone, but it lets you know that this individual is exhibiting some of the warning signs. And sometimes the first three warning signs can be, Amalia, threatening to hurt or kill themselves, or looking for ways to kill self by seeking excessive pills, weapons, or other means, or talking or writing about death, dying, and suicide, because that's something that we see also is, you know, people find little notes, you know, where they left this note, and it's like, oh, my God, what did it say, you know, and sometimes they want to cuss you out or whatever the case may be, tell you what you did, what you didn't do, and all that other mess. But by that same token, some individuals leave a suicide note, some individuals don't. But when they start becoming preoccupied with those things, that's something that we really need to take a look at. Now, even with those, like I said, being the first three and starting those conversations, sometimes we still may not even know what to say when individuals start coming to us with those things. And we're going to go into that because, you know, I remember, Amalia, one time I believe I may have offended a person because she was concerned about a loved one. And, you know, sometimes we get confused with substance use and addiction because, you know, I used to hear people say that they had four or five overdoses. And I used to say, well, was you trying to kill yourself? And I learned that just because a person have an overdose doesn't mean that they automatically die. And I didn't understand that when I first came into the field. And one of the, a person I was having a conversation with was kind of concerned about a loved one and, you know, had a high history of suicide, not only just the attempts, but drug and alcohol addiction, things of that nature. And I told her, I said, you might want to get some insurance on your child. And she got offended by that. And I said it so that if something do happen, you won't be taken by surprise and it won't hurt you financially. Because sometimes when individuals are in pain, they don't realize that all of their affairs financially is not in order. And that financial burden can be placed on somebody else. Because when they're gone, they're gone. But somebody else got to be left to pick up that tab. And that was my way of looking at it. But she was offended by that, by me telling her, you know, you might want to get some insurance on your loved one, which is something that we really need to look into anyway. You know, my family's always been very insurance heavy.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a morbid topic to talk with anyone, but you're nailing it on the head because I believe the statistics say that annually suicide costs America and the United States, I think it was $44 billion annually. Because mm-hmm. you're looking at multiple costs relating to suicide, as well as individually, just with family members preparing a funeral, unfortunately, and all of that. So mm-hmm. it's a very, very hard topic. It's a morbid topic to discuss. But with suicide, mm-hmm. that's the only way that you can address it. As clinicians, we are taught to specifically ask, do you want to kill yourself? Have you thought mm-hmm. of killing yourself? Have you tried to kill yourself? When was the last time you tried to kill yourself? Have you mm-hmm. ever thought, do you feel this way today? But that's because we have gone through training that we are able to address that. I think as a civilian or as a family member, it's a very, very difficult topic to discuss, and we have to be mm-hmm. a little proactive and just really taking all suicide threats seriously. If someone says, I'd be better off dead, or I hate my life, I'm going to kill myself, but not to brush it off as, oh, that's correct. Just them, that's just them. And I think we've mentioned that before.
Well, you know what, and that's true because, I mean, I've had conversations with people where they may have tried one time and was like, I'm not doing that no more. I wind up in the loony bin, right. I was 5150, right. I didn't appreciate that, and, you know, I got my point across, and like I said, and then some individuals are basically terrified of that. Like I said, my thing was I was just scared of depression. I wouldn't think about suicide, but that just being in that right. depressive state was enough for me. I don't even want to play with that.
Right.
Now,
right.
we talked about so some of the warning signs.
I was just going to say that most of the suicide deaths, it was not their first attempt. And what we really, the statistics say that once the risk for completing suicide becomes greater within the first year after an attempt. So mm-hmm. you're just, I mean, it's hard to say because it's an individual. You know, you have to look at each person individually. But correct. If there is an attempt, most likely a second or a third, there will be other attempts until suicide is completed.
But this is the thing, though, Amalia. Every mm-hmm. situation is different. Because
correct,
some of the
right,
information
yeah.
that I'm looking at, it talks about mm-hmm. trying to find out if they had a history of attempts before. Because
right.
it depends. Because when it's your time to go, it's your time to go. Mm-hmm. And we can't determine
right.
that. And even mm-hmm. though most people who attempt suicide may not attempt again, however, mm-hmm. about 16% will repeat it within 1 year. And 21% mm-hmm. will repeat within 1 to 4 years. And this comes from Owen et al., it was back in 2002, but I'm questioning it's probably higher now. But the majority right. of repeat attempts will use more lethal means on subsequent attempts, meaning increasing the likelihood of increased mortality or the mm-hmm. Things of that nature. And approximately 2% of attempters die by suicide within 1 year of their attempt. And the history right. of the prior suicide attempt is the best known predictor for future suicidal behavior, including death by suicide, where approximately 8 to 10% of attempters will eventually die by suicide. So that's why getting a history is very important. And, you know, like right. I said, asking some of the questions. Now, I don't want to kind of minimize things because I do want to get to some of the questions that was emailed to me and, you know, talking about, you know, I'm looking at something that talks about why is it important to ask about ideation. And the reason why it's important to ask about ideation is because in most cases, suicide ideation is believed to be preceded with the onset of the suicidal planning and action, meaning, you know, we want to know what you're feeling. We want to know, you know, why you believe you're feeling these things. So then that way it kind of gives us an idea of whether it's all talk or, you know, is it associated really with the desire or wish to die, meaning the intent. And the reason can either be rational and for your motivation. And it's also essential to explore the presence or absence of the ideation because sometimes things just happen. So, you know, and so we, it's very interesting that we take note and take account of all of these things. So it looked like I lost Amalia, but okay. So now getting back to with some of these things, I received an email and, you know, it kind of goes back to one of the questions I believe I may have already answered. And it said, my son is on drugs. And I was told that he's overdosed several times, yet he has not died. Is he trying to commit suicide? So let me add Amalia back on. Amalia, it looked like your call dropped, but I see you back on.
Is that you? I'm back.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm back.
All right. So I was reading one of the emails that I received, and it said, my son is on drugs, and I was told that my son has overdosed several times, yet he did not die. Was he trying to commit suicide? So being in the field of drug and alcohol, I want to say he probably was not trying to commit suicide.
No.
He basically may have been self-medicating his pain. And that was just his way of relieving and dealing with whatever life issues he was going through because people use drugs for a lot of different reasons. You know, some individuals use it for the thrill. Some individuals use it because they're self-medicating. Some individuals, you know, are struggling with addiction. And, you know, it kind of go back to what I had said before was when I first went into this field, I always thought if a person overdosed that they had died or, you know, I'm like, why are they there? Now, another email. Do you have anything you want to say in regards to that, Amalia? About the son being on drugs?
Correct.
He overdosed?
Yeah, correct.
Okay.
I mean, suicide, you have to look at it individually.
Correct.
So
ask
her. Or him directly.
The next email I received is, why would a kid want to commit suicide? And that's interesting because we're finding that, you know, we see a high number in our seniors, our young adults, and our children. And even children as young as elementary school, you know, they'll start screaming, I want to die. I can't take this anymore. And some kids, even as young as 7 and 8, have attempted, you know, where they could either be being bullied by at school. They could be dealing with some type of abuse by their parents, either physical abuse, sexual abuse, you know, the general neglect, things of that nature. They could be, we always, with our domestic violence clients, Amalia, I've shown that a video in regards to first impression. And one of the things about that video is it talks about a kid who has witnessed domestic violence, got tired of it, and he put a knife up to his throat. So those are some of the things that happen. And sometimes a kid cannot process what their life is going to be like, and so they just don't know what else to do. You know, and one of the things that parents may say, well, okay, well, with a child, what are some of the things and what are their means? I would say, make sure that all prescription is locked. You know, make sure that they don't have access to drugs or alcohol because alcohol poisoning can be one of the leading causes with teenagers and, you know, elementary school children. And also hide all your weapons because a child can't have access and, you know, gain access to a firearm and things of that nature. And another one is hanging themselves. They found children that have hung themselves in a closet, in a garage, and things of that nature. So those are some of the things that I would say to the person that sent me that email in regards to why would a kid really want to commit suicide. And I would just basically say is listen to your child, talk to your child. You know, if your child is being bullied at school, work with the school to try to help your child process and manage those feelings so that your child don't want to either want to kill himself or either want to go to the school and kill people at the school, because that's happening too. You know, we're not going
right.
to, you know, even some culture things, the suicide bombers and things of that nature and stuff like that that's happening. Now,
right. And in regards to the political side of me, we do have protocols in place to address bullying. Both, it's a mental health issue on both sides. Mental health issue mm-hmm. as to the child who is the victim, as well as a mental health issue for the person that is conducting the bullying. And I think another thing that we have to be aware of is that there also is cyberbullying, which we're seeing an increase in. And with cyberbullying, the statistics, I don't remember. I believe it's in the 30% that a child, a school-aged child, which is a minor, 18 and under, will experience some kind of harassment. I see it a lot with my girls, because they're pregnant and the boyfriend has a new girlfriend and the new girlfriend wants to harass her via mm-hmm. Facebook or other social media. So one of the things that Facebook has done is that they now have a safety center. So if you're seeing a friend of yours on your newsfeed that's saying things are concerning in regards to suicide or depression, they actually do have a way that you can contact Facebook, and they will do an intervention or some type of bullying prevention on there.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's in the health center. They actually do have a safety center within the Facebook for that. But bullying, we're seeing an increase in bullying in school-aged children, a lot of suicides going on in regards to bullying. There was a recent one, I cannot remember her name, but she had some kind of injury very, very young. She survived it. I believe it was some type of cancer, but it had a physical deformation in her face. So
mm-hmm.
she just completed suicide at the age of, I believe she was 8 or 9 years old. And
wow.
So those are some of the reasons why children are committing suicide at such a young age. You know,
okay.
obese children, children with disabilities. Just want to
okay.
add that in there. And cyberbullying.
Okay. So the next one, the email I received, it says, I'm in a relationship with a guy. We've been having problems. And he keeps telling me if I leave, he's going to kill himself. I want out of this relationship. If he kills himself, is it my fault? I'm going to say no. Because
no.
if he wants to kill himself, he'll kill himself anyway. And sometimes individuals don't realize that that's also a form of domestic violence and a form of abuse.
Correct.
Because of emotional abuse. When an individual feels trapped in any relationship, then the person keeps telling you, I can't live without you. And if you leave me, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. That goes back to my same old thing, get some insurance. You know,
mm-hmm.
because if he go do it, he go do it. And you don't want him to kill you and kill himself too, which is another one
right.
email that I received that I'm going to read out. But like I said, my answer is no. And you don't want to be in a relationship with someone that's not healthy. And you have
right.
to be healthy mentally, physically, and spiritually. And that's, that person may need some help mentally. And, you know, they could have had a history of that, of that's how they
right.
held on to people, by making them feel sorry for them, by telling them, if you leave me, I'm going to die. You don't want to be with me, because I'd be like, just die. I ain't got time for that one. Now, the next one is an email that
that's
I received.
So is this, that's also a borderline personality disorder. So this person really does need to be assessed, not just in regards to what an appropriate healthy relationship looks like, but as well as, you know, people with borderline personalities have a higher risk of suicide.
Correct. The next one is one of the emails that I received says, one of the things, or the hardest to understand, is the homicide suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to agree with this person that sent me this email. And that is one of the hardest things to understand. Because a lot of times families don't understand that if you are suicidal and you have any suicidal thoughts, why did you have to take one of my loved ones with you? Because that's also been an issue that we see in domestic violent relationships. In the cases is individuals will kill their partner or their loved one and then either kill themselves or kill the family. So we're looking at multiple individuals, not just one. Or, you know, it becomes a suicidal homicide. I remember even with my godbrother, he did that back in, I believe it was 1997, 98, when I first bought my house in Oceanside. I was only in my house for 1 week. He moved me in on a Friday. The following Friday, he did a homicide suicide. And,
wow.
you know, I kind of dealt with the guilt of, you know, I should have said something. I should have intervened. And, You know, and I knew when he was saying what he was saying because, you know, he was HIV positive and so his wife was in having an affair and there was a lot of marital issues going on. And, you know, he went home and he killed her and then killed himself. Now, I want to share some things among you. We only have 10 minutes left on the show. And like I said, if a person wants to call, they can call in at 516-387-1914 if you want to join us. But if not, maybe you can call us and join us next week. Now, you can also Twitter. I'm going to say tweet. Every time I say it, my daughter tells me I say it wrong. But you can find me on Twitter or follow me on Twitter at J.A. Precious P. Or you can email me at preciouspredicament@gmail.com. Or you can follow me. Or find me on Facebook at Jeanette Abney, LMFT. I'm, you know, Molly, I'm starting to filter my personal Facebook because I get these people, somebody, you know what? Somebody sent me a text, I mean, a message early in the morning talking about, you know, I want to meet you. I was like, why are you messaging me so early in the morning? I was pissed off. I said, I'm a married woman. Yeah, he's like, I apologize. Who do that? So, yeah, so I'm kind of being cautious with my personal Facebook. So, you know, if you want to be my Facebook friend, please don't start Facebooking me, asking me a whole bunch of personal questions because I'm tired of making stuff up, but you're really starting to get on my nerves. So, Neil,
you know, my thesis was on that, actually, when in graduate school and I got my master's. I'm just online and how people like that. But I regret. Go ahead.
Okay. Now, in our closing, we basically, like I said, we have about 8 minutes left. So one of the things we want to do, I want to give you guys some techniques in regards to what to do if your loved one is having these suicidal thoughts and, you know, some of the things that we should say and some of the things we shouldn't say because sometimes, you know, we don't want them to think that we don't care. And even if it's us, you know, if you're having these feelings and you do want to hear a kind word from someone, so one of the things is, if it is someone you love, listen to them express their concerns and try to reassure them. You want to work with the individual to create a safety plan and get some help. And there are some things that we should not say. And the reason why we shouldn't say these things is because sometimes we don't want to make matters worse. So, and we may not have the power to do what's called a 5150. But there are people that you can call. There's also a suicide prevention lifeline. You can call 1-800-273-TALK, which if you want to talk to someone, they will listen. There's also
Suicide Hotline.
You can call also the National Suicide Hotline number.
That is the National Suicide. So wherever your listeners are listening to in the United States, that is the 800 number, not just California specific.
And there's also NOMNY, which is another one that individuals can call if they're having these thoughts. But I want to say that also, like I said, some individuals may not have the power to do at 5150, but we also have the PET team and things of that nature. And sometimes what happens is a person that is suicidal, by the time they see the police and all them colorful lights, they kind of change their mind and, you know, make you seem like you're the one crazy right about now. But there are some ways to be helpful to someone who's threatening suicide or engaging in suicidal behavior. Basically,
I just want to add something about NAMI. In Orange County and LA County, we have something called a warm line. So it's not a hotline, it's a warm line. So that's something that provides emotional support. So you can also chat with them online, and they also are through Facebook. So it's warm line. It's through NAMI, NAMI, which is the National Association for Mental Illnesses.
So one of the things is a referral to mental health. If you're dealing with battling with depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, things of that nature, had traumatic loss, first of all, go talk to somebody. You know, you can call a crisis hotline. You can call a suicide prevention hotline. But you can call a trusted friend. You can call someone that you know is going to be there for you. And some of us, you know, some individuals are very religious, spiritual. You know, sometimes we have to top it to our faith and our cultural beliefs. But also, you know, basically do a mental health assessment and follow up, because sometimes there could be a chemical imbalance going on where individuals may need to be assessed for medication. And if you have been basically referred or prescribed medication, take the medication as prescribed. And if you still have any suicidal thoughts while on the medication, please let your psychiatrist or your doctor know, because that can also happen. Now, here's some ways to be helpful to someone who's threatening suicide or engaging in suicidal behaviors. Like I said, be aware. Learn the risk factors and warning signs for suicide and where to get help. Be direct, meaning talk openly and matter-of-factly about the suicide in regards to what you've observed and what your concerns are regarding his or her well-being. Because a lot of times we beat around a bush, and when we're beating around a bush, we're not helping at all. Sometimes we can try to help, but we hurt. We have to be willing to listen. And sometimes that's hard because sometimes we don't want to hear it. But by being willing to listen, allow the expression of feelings and accept the feelings. And we have to be patient with the person. And sometimes as we're being patient, we have to be non-judgmental. Don't debate whether the suicide is right or wrong. We've seen that a lot where people tell you if you die, you do it, you're going to hell, you're going this, you're going that. And, you know, we don't need to do that. Now, that is not the time to be telling a person, because I always tell people, I don't have a heaven or hell to put you in. So, you know, I will listen to what you're dealing with and see if I can either help be part of a solution versus adding to the problem. But we don't want to be judgmental in regards to that and having that debate. But be available, show interest, understanding, and support. Please don't dare them to do it, because sometimes we tell people, you know, I remember the old saying, if your friends jump off the bridge or you go jump off the bridge, you know, so don't dare them to engage in suicidal behaviors or things of that nature. And don't act shocked. A lot of times, you know, we try to put on our face, you know, get your face right. But, you know, don't act shocked. Just listen. Just be there. Active listening. And don't ask why. You know, or if you want to know why, phrase the question in an open-ended question to where they can verbally tell you what's going on with them, so you don't have to say, well, why you want to do that? So that's not really what they want to hear. And do not be sworn to secrecy. You know, Amalia, we're about to end the show. I know we only got like 3 minutes left, but I want to say a lot of times with kids and teenagers will go tell another child or another teenager, and they don't know what to do with that. And then that person has to go either tell their parents or go tell the principal or go tell someone at school, because part of it is the kid don't know, am I supposed to keep it a secret? Am I supposed to help you? They don't know what to do with that information. So even as an adult, don't be sworn to secrecy, because what you're trying to do is help that person save their life, because life is precious. And offer hope that alternatives are available, but don't offer reassurance that anyone ultimately can turn things around in the near future, because they don't want to hear that. Take action. Remove lethal means of self-harm, such as pills, ropes, firearms, alcohol, or other drugs, and get help from others with more experience or expertise. Don't go to another person to tell you how to do it. Be actively involved in engaging a person to see a mental health professional as soon as possible, and ensure that that appointment is made. One of the things that I know we have to do, Amalia, is we have to do what's called a suicide contract, meaning that if the person starts talking about they want to commit suicide, we want to make sure that we give them a contract. Or when I see them next week or whatever, I tell that person, I am so happy to see you. You know, I really appreciate you. You know, I let them know that I'm glad you're still here. You have something to offer, because a lot of times individuals don't feel that they serve a purpose, you know, so don't start telling them life would be better without you anyway, I'm tired of looking at you, you know, because you don't know how that is going to affect the person. So we have 90 seconds left.
No suicide contract.
Basically a no suicide sign and no harm contract. So it is a suicide contract, but it's written that they will not do any harm to themselves. So the myth that he or she wouldn't kill themselves since da-da-da-da-da, you don't want to do that, or he just made plans for a vacation, they got young children at home, or, you know, they signed the contract, so we know they're not going to do it, or they know how dearly their family loves them. But the reality is the intent to die can override any rational thinking because they're in crisis. We have 1 minute left. I want to thank you, listeners, for joining Amalia and I here at Precious Predicaments here at Blog Talk Radio. I also would like to have you join next week as we talk about substance use and parenting, because that's another thing on the rise is substance use. So, again, thank you for listening. here at Precious Predicaments at Blog Talk Radio. And remember, life is precious. Your life is valuable. Troubles don't last always. And if you go and get some help, that way you can help yourself. Again, I look forward to talking with you next week here at Precious Predicaments at Blog Talk Radio. Enjoy the rest of your day.